How have things been going before we get into everything? And I know it's probably expected, but the first thing to discuss is Book Club Radio. And it was one year of it last weekend, was it?
Yeah. Last weekend, I think. Or the weekend before. Yeah, 2 weekends ago. 1 year from my living room in February 11th to, I think we had like 700 people on February 17th. So it was a big journey.
I've been following quite a few of them for quite some time. And, you know, to see the rise of this is incredible over 1 year. And I also saw you shared in terms of subscribers and the engagement online with everything from where it started. It's absolutely incredible to see. One of the big things that I wanted to just chat about was obviously the manifesto that you have. How has that helped, you know, with the diversity of the music, the styles of the DJ sets that you have in curating the music? Because a big thing that I've noticed, which is one of the things that I love about it, is that every set, either from yourself or from any other artist or DJ that you have as part of this, it's always so unique and so different and obviously themed.
Yeah, I would say the whole thing has been an experiment. I mean, yeah, like, you're right. We do have very different styles of music playing all the time. You know, we've gone from like house to ghetto tech to Jersey club to drill, techno, acid, trance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really just like all styles of dance music, I think, we want to bring to Book Club. It is really interesting because a lot of the people that come to Book Club, you know, they come again and again and again. And at least at every single one of our parties, half the people have been before. And that's something that we like to keep for just like keeping the culture, you know, consistent. It does make me wonder, you know, like when we did a Fast and Furious party and it was like, we're doing like club music and breaks. And I was like, how is our crowd who's so used to like listening to house music gonna take that? And so it's been an experiment. I mean, it seems to be working. I don't really know. There's not a huge rhyme or reason to it other than we just kind of do what we want to do and hope everyone likes it.
That's the cool part, is that you have full control over it and complete freedom to play what you love. And I think that speaks to yourself as well, with all the different musical genres and what influenced you in terms of the music collection. I've noticed over these videos, it's been so interesting to see the different artists that you pull in, and, you know, having these sets go from one thing to the other. It's incredible. I mean, I'm sure you must have one hell of a history in collecting music prior to even putting this together, considering it started in your living room and where it is now.
I mean, yeah, for me personally, I've always liked music. I'm at a weird crossroads now because the DJing thing is really starting to take off. But I mean, to tell you the truth, Kyle, since I was a child, my dreams have always been to just do filmmaking. Like, I wasn't like one of those kids that, you know, didn't know what they wanted to be when they grew up and like went to college and had an undecided major. Like, from the time that I was 10, I was like, I'm gonna be a filmmaker. Followed all the steps to do that, went to film school, left college, started working with PBS and making documentaries. And so now I'm at this weird crossroads where the DJing thing is also starting to take off. And I'm like, for a long time I was like, do I call myself a DJ? I mean, of course I am, you know? And so I'm at this, I don't want to think of it as a crossroads, because, you know, like, my dad will call me and he'll be like, when are you gonna start making films again? I'm like, Dad, I still do that daily as a day job, you know? Yeah. That's my current job, is still making documentaries for PBS with Soundfield, which is a music documentary series, so it plays really well into the DJing thing. But yeah, I don't know, like, I've always had this passion for film, but I've always had this passion for music too. And I think, like, my sister is very musical, obviously, Tinzo. She's always wanted to be a musician. That was her dream. I was like, film. She was like, music. And so we've kind of sort of met in the middle on this project. Like, Book Club Radio really brings in both sides. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was like someone who grew up chronically online. And so I think the beauty of the internet is that we've been able to be introduced to music from all times, all parts of the world. I spent a lot of time on 4chan growing up. I think it affected me, and maybe it affected me negatively, but I think I made it out okay. Being on 4chan so much. But yeah, I mean, like, spending time on Mew, I've always just been like really interested in music. And I think, you know, working on Soundfield as well, like, doing music documentaries. Starting that show, I like barely understood, you know, I was in marching band in high school, but like I didn't really understand music structure and how to like write music until I started working on those documentaries, and that's unlocked a lot for me. So I've been able to bring a lot of that into DJing and playing music out for people, so that's helped.
And you know, I was obviously going to touch on Soundfield and Subcultured, but speaking of Soundfield, I mean, I'm sure there was a mass, I mean, while going through all those musical styles, whether you were familiar with them or not, and diversifying the show, I mean, it must have been completely invaluable as well to have access to everybody that you spoke with about it through PBS. And then integrating that too into Book Club Radio, like you said, it definitely would work so hand in hand together. And touching on the filmmaking side, I guess you could also kind of direct the night at the same time in a way that you would absolutely want it to be 100%.
I mean, I think that's true. It's weird because like people see Book Club now, and I got it like full being honest, when we started it, we did all the things that we did so that it would be successful. Like I was trying to make it successful. We didn't just like start it hoping that no one would watch it, right? But we had no idea that people would actually watch it. Like that was the goal, but we had no idea that it would actually work. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's been really interesting to see it kind of pull together, because a lot of times people see it, what it's become, and their reaction is, oh, there must be like a big company behind this, or like it's a startup or something. And that's just not true. Like it's just, you know, a group of friends that I have a camera and we film DJ sets and we throw parties, and we've never done this before. So this is like, you know, us just giving it a shot. But all of that going back to what you're saying about like, you know, my background in Soundfield and the experience that I've been able to pick up there is like, I think that's why maybe it's not surprising, because I really had a crash course in like creating videos for YouTube, you know, learning a lot about music. And so I think all of my experience there has really helped make Book Club successful. Like when going from, you know, making documentaries on YouTube to kind of making like a musical series on YouTube, that transfer was a lot easier, and I definitely didn't start from scratch on it.
And you know, you mentioned you're at a crossroads, but also, you know, film and music goes so hand in hand, and to soundtrack something across the board, that for me must be the most exciting thing, you know, outside of Book Club Radio and putting together documentaries and creating a feeling, or short films for that matter. Was that always a passion while filmmaking and looking at the audio side for films and documentaries and creating that emotion through both audio and visual?
I mean, definitely. Especially when I'm cutting film, I usually will lay out the music first. And, you know, a lot of people will use like a temp track, right?
Yeah.
I'll use a temp track even in like dialogue scenes. And I think it's gotta be like really rhythmic. And I do think that, you know, music is such a powerful device, and you know, they do all those like psychological experiments of showing you a scene of a man eating ice cream, right? And then they'll put a creepy track under it. And then it's a man eating ice cream with the creepy track. And you're like, okay, now this guy's got bad intentions. It's menacing, right?
Exactly.
So I do think music ends up being so much more powerful than the visuals a lot of times. And I think that that's something I've definitely always prioritized in filmmaking. So it is really fun to kind of marry the two with Book Club and like bring music and video together. And I think like my film background really comes through a lot in our Book Club videos, because they're all inspired by like different movies or movie scenes. And I like to describe it as like you're watching a party scene from a movie, right? It's just like a different genre of film each time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get that 100%, which then makes sense why the genre is always so different and themed to what you're actually watching at the same time. But touching on the documentaries, Subcultured was also yours, right?
Yes, yeah.
That I found absolutely fascinating. You know, it really was, because each episode was mind-boggling to me, to see what actually was out there that obviously never got any sort of light of day in terms of being exposed to the public. But I mean, I'm very curious as to what the most shocking and mind-bending subculture was for you to actually discover existed.
I mean, The VR one was really impactful on me. And also it was impactful because that's how I like got introduced to DJing and learned how to DJ was through virtual reality. But I think for me, that was really big. I'm always like very fascinated by tech. And so learning about the VR club scene was mind blowing because I was spending a lot of time doing like surface level VR stuff, like playing Beat Saber, playing different VR games, yeah. Right? Or like doing some social VR, like Rec Room, but that's like mostly like, it's like Roblox, it's like VR Roblox, mostly sure. Children. So to find like this underground club scene that was like all adults where people were kind of like making all of the nightclubs and hand making all of the like avatars and outfits, and there's like a fashion scene intertwined, and you know, it's like word of mouth parties, like you have to know someone to get in. And I was like, how does this, and this is all like happening while we're all on lockdown, right? Like,
yeah,
this is
yeah.
all. So I'm just sitting there like, oh, I really miss going out, you know. And then I'm like learning about all of this like secret world that's out there like at my fingertips. Like I'm like, you know, this is accessible. I could just go, you know, I had to rent a PC because I didn't have a PC at the time.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Finding out that that just existed. And then I just had reached out to someone because I saw people talking about it on Twitter. And I reached out to someone. I was like, hey, I'm working on this documentary series with PBS. You know, I saw that you're talking about underground nightclubs and virtual reality. Like, I'd love yeah. to check it out. And got an invite that way. Spent a lot of time just like meeting new people and learning about the scene. And I think it's also just like this really, because it's so underground and so word of mouth, like it really is a lot of furries, a lot of trans people, a lot of people, like it's very queer, it's very nerdy because it's VR.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's just
yeah,
like
yeah.
this, it's just like this scene where like, you know, a lot of people I think who don't feel comfortable, like, kind of in mainstream society are able to find this like really safe home. And so it was just a really cool experience. That it was one of my favorite ones to work on because it was just like every night, you know, partying in virtual reality. Like how that's such a fun job to have.
It was crazy because I obviously did see it and I couldn't believe that there was this complete fourth dimension of a world where people were existing and living for, and in reality staying in one place but exploring a completely different world.
It gets extra mind-bending. Like it's one thing to see it, but the game itself, VRChat, like isn't creating any of those maps, right? And so it gets extra mind-bending when you go to a racetrack and there's someone DJing on a racetrack, and then there's people drifting cars around that racetrack. And then you realize that that wasn't made by VRChat. That was made by a player. Like someone created that map. Someone created those cars. Someone created the mechanics so that they could drift and yeah. drive around. And it's just like people, the users are creating the world that they're living in. And that makes it even more exciting too. So it's just like, it feels very DIY, like cyberpunk.
You know, this is one of the things that I've been thinking of, and I've been talking to a couple of industry peers and friends about this. And we're in events outside of this podcast. We throw quite a few events around the country here, and it's always so fascinating for me to, you know, consider how, firstly, it's here to stay. And we can get that straight. But it's crazy to realize how a lot of people are resorting to living completely online through their avatar, through this identity that they create and then portray online at the same time. I don't know how you find it, especially with the scene in New York, which is completely different. How do you think that is going to affect in years from now? Because I think after lockdown, I think people have been itching and are still on this rampage of going out and enjoying the outdoors.
Sure.
But do you think later down the line, it's going to affect that in-person touch?
I don't. I hear a lot of like fear, and even like there's a lot of comments on my documentaries about these scenes of people like not fully grasping it. And I think when people don't understand something, like the initial reaction is fear. They're afraid of it. And there's definitely plenty of technology to be afraid of. Like there's, you know, technology can be menacing and it can ruin lives. I think, you know, social media addiction is terrible. Like I get too addicted to scrolling on TikTok, and I think that is definitely having a negative impact on my life. With these creation of virtual spaces, I think a lot of the fear comes from people worrying about it, that it's going to replace the world that they know. And I don't actually think that that's true. And I think that there, you know, I can't say it for certain, but it does feel like a lot of times things sort of swing on a pendulum. And, you know, like you're saying, as lockdown was going on, the numbers of people attending these VR clubs was going up, right? Mm. And then also at the same time as like people, as lockdown was ending, like a lot of people are like, okay, I also want to go outside and experience the real world too. Mm. And so, you know, I've seen from going out that like the IRL events, like real life events are growing as well. And so I do feel like it's just kind of like this pendulum swinging. And I feel like book club is in this really cool place because we're kind of giving people an escape from all of this technology in a way, but then also we're like reaching them through technology.
Yeah.
It's like sort of hypocritical in a way. We're like, don't have your phone out at book club. Like go back to a better time where like, you know, we were all just kind of living in the moment. Yet you found out about us because you were like watching us on YouTube. It is a little hypocritical, but I think that like I'm not worried about it because I think as like the technology is growing, like people will want a space like that. They will want the space where they're like free of their phone or free of, you know, whatever, social media or whatnot. And so I think that that growth has just made people crave what we do more and like crave these real events more.
A culture here that is, you know, traveling through the clubs at the moment, the few that there are now, because South Africa's become a very festival focused entertainment space, and so many clubs, obviously with lockdown and the likes, everything kind of turned into a bar culture because there was a curfew here and it was just a bit of a mess. So when it all came back, everybody got into the habit of bar culture or somewhere that would normally be a restaurant and then go till 10, 11, maybe 12 p.m. And clubs took a major knock when everything did open up. And those clubs that still do operate, they are doing really well and are super underground. And one of the things as you arrive, they put tape or stickers over your camera.
Yeah.
And that is a way more interesting experience because when you see some of these global, I mean, all festivals and a back shot of the crowd, all you see are these little screens. It's crazy. Yeah. And
it is crazy. It's like, are you having fun?
Exactly. Either you're going to be there in the moment or you're going to look at your phone tomorrow and wish you were back there, not looking at everything that you should be experiencing through a screen.
Yeah. And I think there's an extra layer of it too. Like you'll go see your favorite artist. And then as soon as they play that hit song that everyone knows, that's when you take your phone out. And it's like, that could be the best moment for everybody, but then it becomes the worst moment because everyone just took their phone out and they're no longer experiencing it.
A big debate that I've had on my side here is how social media has impacted the nightlife and the scene here quite a lot, because years ago you wouldn't be able to see what a party was like before getting there, and it was always going to be a surprise when you got there that was the case. And you see one wrong or bad Instagram or TikTok about an event that's taking place where you were only planning on getting to 2 hours later, and you make up your mind of, okay, cool, I'm not going. And I think that is so often the case that people don't realize that it happens so often, which then essentially does, you know, deteriorate the attendance of so many of these.
Yeah, I think that you're right that social media definitely has impacted. There's a lot of things there to unpack. One is how I think people being able to see a party before they attend the party affects the party, right? You know, book club definitely runs into that. I think it makes us more accessible to people who might not be willing to give it a try.
Mm.
You know, because they can watch it online and like, oh, I basically feel like I'm there, right? And so now I've met people at book club who have not been to like other clubs before, or like been to like festivals or been to parties. Like book club is like their first introduction to it. So I think it's made us accessible in that way. Like there's people out there willing to give it a shot.
Yeah, it can work both ways, I guess. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think the other thing that you're talking about in terms of people, well, one thing, you're right, it can work both ways. There is this there's a sort of situation too where, like, you know, if something can get stale, right? You lose the excitement because you've already seen it online. Now, I know the excitement you're talking about, where you, like, you find out at a party, the details are really sparse. You know, someone tells you it's going to be really, really good, but you don't know what to expect. You get there and it either lives up to its hype or it doesn't live up to its hype, right? That excitement's really awesome. And that's part of the reason why we have to, like, book club has to be a different party every time. It's a different location, different theme, different, you know, different DJs, different, like, the only through line to every book club party is that we have got our manifesto, me and my sister DJ, and at least half the people who are there have been there before. So the community is sort of the same. But I think that helps us keep that excitement. Like, you can watch book club, but, like, our last party was, like, Y2K vampire inspired rave, like Blade. Like, I like sitting at the entrance, just, like, watching people walk through the door and, like, just getting their reaction. And, like, when you walk into the room and you see all these people dressed, like, it's not even Halloween, but people are fully dressed up for the occasion. And that is, like, the immersion that I love watching people walk into. So we still get that a little bit, even though people have watched us online before, we still get the, like, initial excitement. But yeah, I think it is hard to contend with, like, the social media space where, like, the, you know, mass opinion can really affect, you know, turnout and, you know, parties, and someone can just, like, you know, like, there's a million reasons why people won't like what you're doing. Maybe you're too popular, maybe you're not popular enough. Like, you'll never make everyone happy. It's hard to contend with that. I agree with you. And I don't really have an answer for it.
No. I was just curious to see what your thoughts were. It is a super interesting topic and probably another interview topic later down the line.
I mean, no, I love talking about kind of the dynamics between, like, you know, events and attendee. Because it's like you have to work together in synergy in a way, because there's this Cary Chandler quote that I talk about all the time. He was giving an interview with Red Bull, I think, where he basically said that people go to a party for the atmosphere, but they don't realize that they are the atmosphere. So you have to make, as an attendee, you have to make the atmosphere, essentially. And that's really what we're trying to, you know, spread with book club is, like, you know, the rules are not rules for us. It's asking you to be in the right mindset to, you know, participate, essentially. So, you know, when people go to book club, if it feels different than another party, it's not because we've done anything other than just ask the people attending to really participate and be involved, essentially.
I think that makes all the difference. And I think it also, I think to a degree, compared to any other events, I think people kind of like to have some sort of direction, you know, and as much as the rules don't necessarily explain what the event's going to be about, but it does immediately, subconsciously, I would say, give them an ability to be open-minded about every aspect of what they're about to experience.
Yeah, I think it definitely helps. And it also helps you connect to the person next to you too, because you both are sort of like, you know, you have this extra level of you're on the same page, basically. You're kind of all in it together a little bit. So that definitely helps too. I'm not someone that's, like, super into rules, but
Not in music and film. I don't think that's anything anybody would ever abide to, especially in two creative hand-in-hand industries.
But, you know, sometimes having that box is helpful so that you know what the lines are and then you can decide to break them or go with them. But, I don't know. It's been really, like, I've definitely learned a lot from this. And also, the funny thing is like, we preach these rules all the time. Like, even if my sister and I do a concert outside of book club or, like, play a party outside of book club, we are, like, asking people, like, hey, we would still like you to follow these rules, because it just makes for a better party and it makes for a better experience when you're DJing. We spent a lot of time talking about these rules, but when I sat down on the couch to, like, actually write them out, I didn't spend a whole lot of time on them. I just kind of was like, what would make a good party?
Yeah.
It probably took me like 10 minutes to write them out. And then I sent them to the other book club people and I was like, what do you guys think? we debated for a while, and then I posted them like that second. And so it's like been such a life defining thing for me, or a career defining thing for me, but it took me like 10 minutes to come up with.
I wanted to just touch on the music production side, and firstly the crazy reaction your Creed remix has had. And I know I'm sure everybody's spoken to you about this, but it's all I've seen on my feed, to be honest, like from 1001 tracklists or TikToks, or I think I saw, was it in a Tiesto podcast or something as well?
Yeah, Club Life. That's, which I was like, that's really cool, because I've grown up listening to Club Life, so
it's crazy. Was that made just for Book Club Radio? And obviously when it was exposed to online, it's just blown up.
I mean, I knew that. So I'd never actually done any music production before. Like I started DJing a few years ago, and I just kind of wanted to get into making music. My sister and I have like recorded songs in the past, but I've never actually taken it seriously. So on Thanksgiving, I bought Ableton, and I was like, I'm gonna just learn this and sit down with it. And so I was really trying to like make something. And the first thing I made was this like Jesus Christ Superstar trance remix that I played at Book Club in December. And then I was like, okay, that was cool. Like it was well received, but it was like, it was cool. So then I'm sitting on the couch and like, I'm listening to, I'm watching TikTok, and then people are talking about Creed's new tour that's coming out. Mm-hmm. And like the song is One Last Breath. And I like, that was, my brother made me a CD with that song when I was a kid. And like, I would just like play it in the car all the time. Just like, I love that song so much. And I'm sitting there and like the guitar riff in the intro is just like isolated. So I was like, wait, why isn't anyone ever just put like a kick drum to this? And so I just went into Ableton, like, looped the guitar part, just like puts down some drums. I was listening to a lot of progressive house, like Sasha and like, you know, a lot of different producers. And I was like, just like kind of mimicking the drums that they did and put it out there. And I made it the day before the book club party, like intending to play it out for book club, just because that's, you know, where I'm mostly DJing. So I'm like, you know, let me just put it out there. And
The reaction from the crowd was so goosebump worthy. It was crazy. It was amazing to see. And you going mad, the crowd going mad. It was incredible. Like
fully, like, I know it's like, it's a bad thing, I think, sometimes when you're a producer and a DJ, because like I fully DJed that song. Like I was like, this is going to be the peak of my set. Like I put it like 2/3 into the set. Like, you know, I was like kind of building everyone up for this moment. Drop Creed on them, and I knew it was going to be unexpected. So
Joseph, thank you so much for making the time, and it's been so great chatting to you.
Yeah, for sure. It's really cool that there are people who have, like, we've had some people from like Australia and Korea and Paris and Switzerland, like far back too. So, and every time like someone comes from really far away, I'm like, that is so awesome. Like the dedication to just like come and be at Book Club is, I'm very thankful for it. Like I tell everyone, I'm like, you know, we're just friends doing this and kind of just doing what we want. But at the same time, we're still really thankful that other people are interested in it.
Maybe 6 feet is so far down.